number two, Will Peterson sitting in for Brandon Stokely today, and we want to hear from you. How you feeling about the clean sweep from Denver sports teams last night? Nugs win, Avs win, Rams roll, and are on to the round of 64. Tell us how you're feeling at 303-713-1043. That's the RamosLaw.com text line, and that's where you give us your thoughts. Same rules over on Twitch, twitch.tv/DenverSportsCom, where you can hang out there in the chat room. It was a 66-42 final for the Rams. They were in control pretty much the entire game. It was a weird halftime score, Will. I saw it all over Twitter, right? Football halftime, it was 27-14 at halftime. And as we talked about, the Cavaliers of Virginia, they were stuck on 14 for basically an hour. What did the total get up to? 18 consecutive missed shots for the Virginia Cavaliers. It was tough to watch. It was brutal. But the Rams found a way to get it done. They played their brand of basketball and didn't get sucked into the, hey, this is what Bennett and his boys want to do, and we have to counter. They made it the other way around, and that's why they're moving on.
Yeah, definitely. I think the narrative today, and you're seeing it on all the national shows, is going to be Virginia's terrible. Virginia stinks. Virginia's awful. The committee screwed up. Can't believe they let Virginia into the big dance over Indiana State or St. John's or Pitt or whoever your favorite bubble team is. But okay, I get all that.
Yeah.
Virginia was terrible. That was hard on the eyes last night to watch. No one's going to come in today and say, that was all CSU. But I also want to be careful that we don't come in today and say, oh, that was just all Virginia being bad, and the Rams don't deserve any credit, and anyone would have beaten the Cavaliers last night. No, they play smothering defense, and they take teams far down in the shot clock, and Virginia uses a lot of shot clock. Well, guess what? That's a perfect storm for Nico Medved and his bunch, because if they're taking shots with 1 second, 1 second left on the shot clock, 18 feet from the rim, They ain't going to make that. And when you go 51 minutes of real time in between buckets, 51 minutes. Think about what you could do in 51 minutes of your life. That's how long Virginia went from the middle of the first half, the Rammies credit to.
Well, it was actually opening possession. And you said it earlier, like the Virginia Cavaliers, they want to take the shot clock down. They're really not going to start any action until like 7 or 8 seconds left on it. But first possession, Virginia doesn't even get a shot up. It went up into the air, but the shot clock violation had already been called. And that, you saw Nico get fired up. The guys on the bench, literally, first possession, standing up, fired up about the defensive effort from the Rams. So you knew they were there and ready to go. And then Isaiah Stevens, as we mentioned, didn't have the greatest game. He did say something afterwards that, I don't know how I should take it, Will. I want you to tell me how you feel about it. I was a little turned off by it. He was surprised by the intensity and the pressure of the, you know, win or go home environment.
Well, he's been in that environment before, couple years ago against Michigan, so it's a little disappointing that it surprised him. That being said, he had 5, 6, and 4, so it's like, okay, he wasn't a total non-factor. I'm not a huge fan of 5 points from my best player. I get it. But 6 boards, 4 assists, he did other things. He didn't just pout and take his ball and go home. And Nico Medved certainly didn't put him on the bench. He played 35 of the 40 minutes. So while I don't love the line from Isaiah, Nick Clifford didn't seem to mind the pressure. Joel Scott didn't seem to mind the pressure. And guess what? If Isaiah needed to get that out of his system, all good.
Yeah.
He may go hang 25 on Texas on Thursday. So while I don't love the line, I'm also not worried about him. And actually, I'm more encouraged than ever, because if I had told you, hey, someone's going to win by 25 and Isaiah Stevens is only going to have 5 points.
Right.
You would have said, oh, wow. Virginia beat CSU by 25. Yeah. That's stunning. No, the Rams won by 25. And their best player only had 5 points. If anything, we should walk away more encouraged from that, because it shows they have an even another level that they can get to as they start to play tougher teams in this tournament.
Yeah, I would have said, dang, the Rams lost 65-40, you know?
Exactly.
That's what it would have felt like. Rams fans, how are you feeling about it? Going back to Virginia, Wally Szczerbiak, that dude's like first team all eyebrows. He's like a handsome devil, but has like caterpillars just sitting up above his eyeballs. I never understood it, but I just like it, you know?
You like Zerbs?
I like his eyebrows.
Okay.
They're just nice and thick.
He could shoot the three back in the day.
Heck,
that's
yeah,
that's what I remember about Wally. But yeah, he was one of the many who absolutely ripped the committee to shreds, of course, for putting Virginia in the dance, which they certainly didn't belong.
Yeah, take a listen to what Wally had to say after.
This performance matters by Virginia. I mean, Mountain West completely blew them off the floor. Mountain West, we've been saying, has been completely underseeded. And the way you perform in this tournament, it puts the committee on notice. They made a mistake putting Virginia into the NCAA tournament. Every bracketologist was saying it. They go out and play like this. It's unwatchable basketball the way they played today on national TV. St. John's is sitting there like, we've won 6 out of 7. We're scoring 90 points a game, playing great basketball down the stretch in the Big East. Seton Hall beat Marquette and UConn. They're sitting at home or in the NIT. They should be in this NCAA tournament. Pitt should be in this NCAA tournament.
Or Oklahoma.
Also,
Oklahoma,
the committee made a big mistake by putting this team in the NCAA tournament this year. And it's nothing against Tony Bennett. He's a great national championship winning coach. But his team did not belong on this floor with Colorado.
He's absolutely right. Wally Szczerbiak is absolutely right. You know what another layer to that is? Because I heard guys on First Take and ESPN this morning saying they should walk away from Tony Bennett. That both should mutually agree to part ways.
Mm.
If you're Tony Bennett, you're not mutually agreeing to that because, Will, you know who's going to hire Tony Bennett if they let him go in Virginia? Absolutely no one. Absolutely no one. Why would you want that to be your system in 2024?
Yeah, but the dude just won a natty, what, 4 or 5 years ago?
And then what happened, though? Then he got beat by 16.
I think it was the reverse.
Oh, the reverse, okay.
But he did get beat by a 16. But, yeah, I don't know, man.
Would you hire him? You want your school to do that?
I don't want my school to do that, but the guy's got a resume. I mean, you're saying this guy's chopped liver. I'm not so sure he is. I understand last night was ugly.
I think he would be a great basketball coach in 1954.
Oh, man. Tell us how you really feel. I did like how Szczerbiak called it unwatchable, though.
Yeah.
Because that's what it was. And we had all previewed this game and had noted that Virginia had scored in the 40s in 3 of their last 9 games.
Yeah.
They had scored 40 against Duke, 40-something against North Carolina, and it was, they may not crack 50. And what'd they do last night? They didn't crack 50.
Right.
So I don't understand how you and I, who weren't exactly tuning into every Virginia basketball game this year, could see that coming, yet 20 people on a selection committee sit in a room for hours and hours and hours and hours and go, yeah, you know what? This team, they are in the big dance. I mean, did you see the video of Virginia finding out they got selected?
They lost their minds.
Because they were shocked.
Yeah.
When do you generally lose your mind in sports? When something shocking happens. That looked like a team that just hit a 3/4 court buzzer beater to win a game. Why do you act like that? Because you didn't expect it to happen.
Yeah.
They didn't expect to dance, and they got embarrassed last night. And I'm glad it was the Rammies who did it. Like I said from the jump, let's make sure we give CSU the proper credit, too.
Like
they played
that.
A damn good game, especially after getting the jitters out early and really pulling away end of the first half, start of the second half.
CSU certainly deserves a ton of credit. They're now on to the round of 64 to take on Texas on Thursday. We want you to go to denversports.com/hoops and have a chance at $5,000. If you got the winning bracket, you're going to have bragging rights and some cash in your pocket. Thanks to our friends over at Sport Clips, it's our 5K bracket challenge. You have to get to denversports.com/hoops before 10 a.m. tomorrow. That's when the games will officially start. Sign up, fill out your bracket, submit that bad boy, and then just bust out the yellow highlighter and mark all your right games to collect your $5,000. Again, shout out to Sport Clips for getting it done. Denversports.com/hoops to go sign up. Go get your money right now. We're going to go back to the Nuggets surviving a banged up Timberwolves team last night and have that conversation about who is really the big threat in the West. That's next.
Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan presents Stokely and Josh.
All right, we're going to touch on the Nuggets here in just a moment. Quick addition to the Denver Broncos. It's so late that you can't even really get excited for the additions, but they are adding depth to the offensive line. Matt Peart is going to sign a 1-year contract. He was the Giants' third-round pick back in 2020. Obviously, going to be looked at here as a backup with Garrett Bowles and Mike McGlinchey still around. But he's a young fella. And he's a big dude. He turns 27 in June. He's 6'7", 315 pounds. Yeah, just stacked giant bodies, Will. You're always going to need depth on the offensive and defensive line. And George and Sean Payton have found some of that today in Matt Peart.
Yeah, he was primarily a backup in New York. He played in 43 games, but he started only 7. So what do you think of when you think of that swing tackle guy, right? He's a guy who can probably play on either side of the line, an emergency policy. Of course, We like Cam Fleming as the Broncos' primary backup, but don't know the future of Cam Fleming. So Pert could potentially be that replacement for Fleming if anything happens to Bowles or McGlinchey. Like you said, though, 6'7", 315 is cool with me. It's worth bringing in, but also this isn't worth the alarms and the breaking news bells because last time I checked, the Broncos have a very established left tackle and a very established right tackle. Clearly a backup signing, and I know Bowles was a trendy name for a few weeks there. Is anything going to happen? I think Bowles is out of the woods at this point. I think he's clearly the starting left tackle for the Denver Broncos next year.
100%. And it was, who was it? Was it Mike Clay, I think his name is, the NFL reporter, who does the 1 through 5 rating scale and then accumulates your total score? And the Broncos were, you know, 30th in most, but 10th in offensive line. So that's a good check mark for where the Denver Broncos are, bringing back all five and all five being able to play 99% of the snaps a year ago. But did add depth today, and he is a giant man that is not yet even 27 years old. So that's always good. Young, huge, and a depth piece you're not relying upon a much. All right, let's get back to these Nuggets, where they were last night in Minnesota, wrapping up the road trip. It was a weird night for Nikola distributing the ball. He only had 2 assists, and Will, it was actually only the 4th time in his NBA career he went into a 4th quarter without an assist.
Wow.
Jamal was doing his thing, and he had a double-double with points and assists. It was just strange. It wasn't one of those nights where, like, Joker was facilitating and dudes were just missing shots, because there's plenty of that to pull from an example. It was just like Jamal was the facilitator, and Joker was scoring and just grabbing rebounds. It was a strange game. Obviously, they win and still put up dummy numbers for Joker, but just his assists being that low, it's a head-scratcher.
It is, but also we have to remember Minnesota was without, of course, Karl Anthony Towns, Rudy Gobert, and Naz Reid. So what am I doing if I'm Michael Malone last night? I'm telling Nikola Jokic, be aggressive. Go score the basketball. We need you to score tonight because they don't have anyone who can body you up inside. What does Nikola do? He scores 35 points on 22 shots. That's a great ratio. 14 of 22 from the field is a solid percentage. He makes 3 of his 4 threes last night, too. So, yeah, 2 assists. You look at that and you go, whoa. 2 assists, I mean, the lowest I feel like I ever see him with is 6 or 7 assists, but at the same time, he had 35 and 16. Mm-hmm. So he still had a great, great, great game. It's an anomaly. I'll give you that. It's a weird stat, but I also think it goes to show you that this narrative that Nikola Jokic is only about passing and facilitating and isn't aggressive enough, because there's still people out there who say the Joker's not aggressive enough, Joker's not aggressive enough. Look at last night. He had 35 points. He was by far the leading scorer in the game, by far the leading scorer for the Nuggets, and he took 22 shots. You know what he is? He's smart.
Yeah.
And he can realize what each game calls for. And last night, what did it call for? Him to score because Minnesota was missing all their bigs.
He's like the T-1000 of basketball players that can evaluate, like, in real time. You know, that little red dot comes out of the eye.
Yeah.
And he's evaluating in real time, do I score? Do I dish? Is the double team going to come? Or, you know, what's the right play? And he can do it on the fly, and he's always a step ahead of everybody else. So it was impressive. It was weird. It was weird when I didn't even notice it, because he plays the game the right way so much that I had to go to the box score, and I'm like, man, what's Joker got on the triple-double? Because, you know, I like that action.
Yeah, you like the devil.
And I was like, well, that's going to not happen tonight, but it just caught me by surprise a little bit. Let me ask you about Minnesota. I told you earlier I don't have the full respect probably that I should. I thought the Nuggets were going to handle business. They scored 70 in the first half, then 17 in the third quarter, and let Minnesota come back and make a game of it without Cat, without Gobert, without Naz Reid. We got to take them seriously, don't we?
I do. I think we very much so do. I think they are the biggest threat to the Nuggets in the Western Conference, Josh, because the Clippers are going to clipper, man. And they've had some moments in the last few weeks where they've fallen off. We were worried about them. I know they're still close in the standings, but we were worried about them being the one seed. I don't think that's going to happen. Oklahoma City is still going to go through some growing pains. I don't think the Nuggets are even going to face the Thunder in the Western Conference Finals, because I think they'll lose to the 8-seeded Warriors or Lakers in round 1.
Oh, dang.
Or lose to the Clippers as a 4-1 in round 2, and the Nuggets can still get home court. So, yeah. They're the biggest threat the Nuggets are going to face in going back-to-back. And there are people that will argue the Nuggets played 4 series last year. Minnesota was the toughest of the 4 series, yeah. And it was their first series. I would lean towards Phoenix just because Phoenix got you 2-2 and then close at halftime in game five. And if you'd had a bad second half, you would have gone back to the desert down 3-2. Then it would have gotten scary. But Minnesota was clearly the second best team the Nuggets faced last year. I respect the Heat, but I think the Heat were out of gas, and I think the Nuggets knew that. I see Minnesota as the biggest threat to the Nuggets in the West. And, of course, Boston is the biggest threat overall. But you can make a case to me that Minnesota is just as scary as Milwaukee. You can make a case to me that Minnesota is just as scary as the Heat.
Mm-hmm.
The 76ers, if they somehow get Embiid back. Yeah, I think we should take them very seriously. How about you?
Yeah, I'm starting to lean that way, starting to take steps into the direction where you are with the Minnesota Timberwolves, because Anthony Edwards has evolved into a legitimate superstar in the NBA. He's developed a bit, you know, a better jump shot, not a huge threat from beyond the arc, but he can knock it down in his athleticism and his ability to create his own shot, get to the rim, and then dunk all over somebody is certainly impressive. And they have great defenders. That's another thing, man. This Minnesota team, it's literally built to beat the Denver Nuggets. That's what Tim went over to do, and that's what Tim has done with his roster construction. So I still think in a seven-game series, I love the Nuggets versus anybody just because of who Nikola is and how smart he is. There's something else that you said there talking about Phoenix last year. I didn't even think about it until you said it out loud. Remember what Phoenix's plan was? Make him be a scorer.
Let him score.
Let him score. And actually, to their credit, it worked a couple of times to steal some games from Denver. But maybe we're seeing it right now, Joker evolving into that, of recognizing, man, this is what Phoenix did to me last year. I still have to be as dangerous in all aspects if I'm not the facilitator that I was. And that's what he did last night.
Yeah, it's a good point. I remember the conversations we had last year, man. Would you rather he has 20, 15, and 12 or 45, 10, and 3?
Yeah.
And I think everyone said 20, 15, and 12 mm-hmm. because he's the guy who raises all boats and makes everyone around him better. So, yes, I'm glad you brought that up. 35 and 16 is a great stat line. We don't want a lot of 35 and 16 and 2 moving forward. Hopefully those Jokic assist numbers get pumped back up, but they won, and I got to ask you, how scared were you at the end when Anthony Edwards is barreling down the court and KCP, I think, tries to take a charge, and Edwards gets a great look at the buzzer to send that thing to overtime?
Oh, I was nervous.
Yeah.
You kind of stand up off the couch. Oh, okay. You know what I mean? They got the dub. So nervous about it, but it should be a fun series if the two meet in the postseason. And let's go to ESPN this morning where J.J. Redick was on First Take giving the Nuggets some love.
The Denver Nuggets right now, to me, are in championship form.
I agree.
Coach Michael Malone talked about this text message that Nikola Jokic sent over All-Star break. Hey, guys, we got to come back from break with the proper focus. They're 12-2 since the break. Them, along with Boston, have looked like the class of the NBA since the All-Star break. Michael Porter Jr., the way he's played, the way he closed last night, that's what it's about to me.
Absolutely.
Having that guy that you can rely on. He is averaging over 20 a game since the All-Star break, shooting over 40% from three. And the interesting thing about last night.
63% of clutch time this year.
There you go.
Yeah.
The interesting thing about last night to me was this notion that we can beat the Nuggets if we make Jokic a scorer. He had two assists last night. Only time he's had that few of an assist was back in November against the Houston Rockets. He feels the game. He reads the game. They start the game last night with Kyle Anderson on him. What does he do? He plays aggressive. He's got Luke Garza on him. What does he do? He plays aggressive. He feels the game and he reads the game to perfection almost every time.
Yeah, because he's the T-1000. He basically just described what we described.
Yeah.
That makes me feel good because JJ's a smart man despite going to Duke. That was for Kevin.
I get it, but Duke's generally a pretty smart school. You gotta be easy here.
Well, I got in.
Oh, well, there, take that back, Will.
Did you really?
Well, yeah, I went to Duke.
Okay. Yeah, he's a Dukie.
That's right.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
He's a walk-on, too, played for Coach K.
Yeah, I went to Princeton, too.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, I was a two-guard on Indiana. You remember that?
Yeah.
That 16 ACT score got me in, you know?
Skyview, from Skyview to Duke. That's what it was.
Horizon,
excuse me.
Same thing.
Yeah,
same
it really thing. Is. Except for Horizon had a better nickname. All right, which we can't say on the radio. I want to get back to the Avalanche. You know what else I want to do, Will? You and I have talked about it off air, but not on yet. Let's touch on how great Casey Mittelstadt has been for the Colorado Avalanche. But let's also talk about how ridiculous Major League Baseball is and the decision they made this morning. Both are next.
It's Stokely and Josh on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
continue to stay red hot. 7 straight victories after a 4-3 win over St. Louis last night and wrapped up the road trip bringing home all 8 points that were possible. Hattie for Miko. McKinnon extended his point streak to 16 games, but I don't want to talk about those guys, Will. We will, for sure. I want to talk about Casey Mittelstadt, who had a goal in this game as well. He was the only other Av to score, not named Mikko Rantanen. And the goal that he had, I mean, just the quick wrist movement.
Yep.
It didn't even look like he drew his stick back. That's all wrist power. You know, like, you know what I mean? Flicking it forward, like, that's how I play a foosball. You know, you just roll the thing. Like, he just flicked the wrist forward, and that thing was a laser to the back of the net. There's just been a couple of things, Will, with Casey Mittelstadt, that he's not going to wow you with his speed on the ice. He's not going to wow you with his stick handling and, you know, spin move to get by somebody and put one past the goaltender. But his ability to read a play, almost Nikola Jokic-like, you know, dialed down a bit, obviously, but to see the play develop before it actually develops and knowing, like last night, when puck on my stick, I have very little time. I can't wind up and fire one. I got to get it off as quick as possible and still have the power that he had behind that puck. I have been so impressed with Casey Mittelstadt. I can't pick who my new favorite Av is, Casey Mittelstadt or Sean Walker.
Yeah, I mean, Sean Walker was great in that win over the weekend against Edmonton. I think the biggest thing, Josh, is since Nazem Kadri departed town, they've been looking for this second-line center, and they've tried different guys. Remember they tried Alex Newhook?
Oh, yeah.
That was the one I was trying to think of earlier. Yeah, it was Alex Newhook, and he just couldn't live up to the hype. And then they trade for Lars Eller, who scored the game-winning goal in the Stanley Cup Final 5 years ago, and he was terrible. And then they trade for Ryan Johansson in this big contract because he used to be good in Nashville, and the guy comes here and looks like he's skating in quicksand. Finally, I give Joe Sakic and Chris McFarland credit, because should they have let Nazem Kadri walk? I don't know. That's 50-50, because you were either going to pay Kadri or Nichushkin. We don't have to get into all of Nichushkin's issues over the last year, but when Nichushkin's on the ice, he's really, really, really good. Mm-hmm. So let's just say they made the right decision. I give them credit for firing dart after dart after dart and finally finding Mittelstadt, because for the first time since I was watching the Avs in the 2022 Stanley Cup playoffs, I feel like they have a second line again.
Yeah.
And that's a good feeling to watch them and think, oh, Nathan and Mikko aren't on the ice? Oh, well, they have no shot of scoring. No, now they do have a shot of scoring. And we saw that last night, as you mentioned, on the quick wrister by Mittelstadt, which ultimately tied that game up 2-2 last night. The Avalanche had 2 comebacks again last night. They were down 2-1. They tied it 2-2. Mm-hmm. They were down 3-2. They tied it 3-3 before winning 3-3. These guys are the comeback kids. And what could they not do in the playoffs last year, Josh? They couldn't come back.
And they were down every game.
Seattle scored the first goal every single game.
Yeah.
Right? And if they did come back, they exhausted themselves to do it. Or like in game 7, they got down again. And I know there was, you know, everyone thought they tied the game in the third period. It didn't work out. But at least this year, if you get down 1-0, you're not going to feel like, well, here we go again. Whereas last year, Seattle scored the first goal and half those games felt like, they're not going to win
tonight.
It's over. They don't have the firepower.
To your point, that was their 23rd comeback win of the year. That tops in the NHL. So it's never over when you are a part of the Colorado Avalanche. That's what makes them so dangerous with getting Val back and the additions that they have made. It's just been perfect from Chris McFarland and Joe Sakic upstairs. Avs fans, how are you feeling? They are now home from the road trip and right in the driver's seat of winning the Central and chasing that top seed in the Western Conference. Let us know at 303-713-1043. Kev, a few people know the nickname of Horizon that we've talked about.
There's a reason we had a daycare there.
That's right.
What am I missing here?
I'll tell you during the break.
Isn't it like Horizon Hawks?
Yeah. But that's
pretty
not
PC. Well, the Hawks?
That's their name, but that's not what they were called. And I'll tell you what it is. Yeah. The Texters are picking it up. They're up there in the north side where Kev and I reside. All right, we'll get back to some Avs. Can we talk about baseball for a second? It's not something that we do a lot here in this market because it's sad for the most part. Unless you're going to the game. The games are awesome. But the results, you know, don't tally. Major League Baseball apparently opened their season today.
Oh, yeah.
At 3:30 in the morning.
In the middle of the night.
In Korea, correct?
Dodgers and Padres just playing regular season games. Like the 2024 baseball season has started.
Yeah.
Apparently, no one had any idea.
So I will admit, and I say it all the time, baseball is not my favorite sport. It's the last of the sports for me. I just didn't grow up with it or playing much of it. So it's not my jam. But I would love for the Colorado Rockies to be relevant, to matter, so that we had something to talk about through the summer. But this is just, again, furthering the point that they don't know what they're doing. That Bud Selig has no idea how to appeal to the audience. Rob Manfred, sorry.
Say, Bud hadn't been commissioned for a long time.
Manfred, I'm sorry. But has no idea who he's trying to target or the fan base that they're trying to build. 3:30 in the morning, and then you're going to go back and play regular season or spring training baseball games. This is the biggest swing and miss of any sports opening weekend, opening day, opening night, whatever you want to call this, of all time, Will.
Yeah, it's just mind-boggling that the Dodgers and Padres played in Korea at 3 a.m. while we were all sleeping. Apparently the Dodgers won 5-2. It's Shohei Ohtani's debut. Mm-hmm. You think you'd want the world to see that? No, they just bury it at 3 a.m. in Korea. And like you said, they are going to come back and play more spring training games that don't count. Jeez. This would be like the Denver Broncos and the Kansas City Chiefs going overseas to play week one in August. That counts in the standings, doing it at 2 in the morning, and then come back and, oh, yeah, Broncos and Texans week four of the preseason doesn't count. I mean, seriously, when I lay it out like that, the absurdity of the situation hits your mind of how dumb baseball is to put their opening game in the middle of the night and then come back and play more exhibitions. You go to the official standings pages, everyone's 0-0, except for the Dodgers. They're 1-0, and the Padres are 0-1.
Well, see, I didn't, it's probably a fault of mine, but I'll be honest here. I didn't even realize this was happening until I woke up today and I, you know, get ready to do the show. I'm watching SportsCenter. I'm checking my Twitter timeline, and it's all somebody broke their glove. And I'm like, oh, man, people are really into this glove-breaking thing in a spring training game.
Right, like, who cares?
Why the hell does this matter so much? And then I find out, oh, it actually counts in the standings. So, yeah, that error and the run scored on the play is going to affect the standings in the long term, which was made me even more mad and absolutely ridiculous. Baseball, we keep saying it on this show, and Stokely calls it the can't get right guy. Right? We all have one in the crew, and if you don't know who it is, it's you. That's what baseball is in the major four. They're the can't get right sport.
Well, and I got to ask you this. Will the Rockies ever be tied for first place in the NL West again this year? Because they're now technically a half game back, Josh. I don't think they will ever find themselves in a tie for the division the rest of the season.
Earliest ever. It's March 20th, and we get to have that conversation. I'll ride with you, Will. Yeah. I don't think they find themselves there either.
Depressing.
It is very depressing. Baseball going to baseball, though. They get in their own way at a crazy, crazy rate, and they did it again today. All right, let's talk a little Broncos coming back. The national media believes Bo Nix is Sean Payton's new guy. Well, our own Mark Schlereth is not sold on the Oregon quarterback. We'll tell you why and get into the quarterback conversation next.
You're listening to Stokely and Josh on Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
All right, let's get into a bit of a Broncos conversation as they have added a depth piece. Matt Peart, a young, giant offensive lineman, is going to come and play the depth role for the Denver Broncos. But, of course, Will, all the rage and conversation is about quarterback. It's about Bo Nix, and apparently that being Sean Payton's new guy. Every national talking head has some sort of comparison to Drew Brees and how they are similar in size and pocket awareness and all the stuff that they do. But our very own Mark Schlereth, you know, he watches the tape. They do Telestrator Tuesday, all the good stuff, and, you know, stinks a great football mind. He is not sold on Bo Nix. He has his eye on a tight end.
Bowers and Bo Nix are on the board at 12.
Bowers.
Wow, without hesitation.
Bowers is a really good football player.
Okay.
But I look at it also like, man, the Broncos have so much rebuilding to do that you need really good football players in a cost control environment.
By the way, for the argument out there that
Well, you got to take a quarterback. Why? Because if you don't love, if Sean Payton doesn't love a quarterback to take at 12, get a stud football player, add to this team, continue to build your roster, and guess what? What do we know will be the case next year? There'll be four or five more can't-miss quarterbacks that will be in the draft next year. It happens every single year.
And you'll have more capital, draft capital.
And you'll have more draft capital. Correct.
All right, so they're not dead set on finding a quarterback, and really what I was looking at there is Mark's take on Brock Bowers, saying that's the play at 12. And you had hinted that earlier, Will. You can get Bowers and a quarterback if you play this the right way. He talked about Bowers reminding him a bit of George Kittle, which is obviously a huge name and, 1B of top tight ends in the NFL right now. Maybe two, because Travis has kind of got that thing locked up. But he's still a top dog at the tight end position. Your trade proposal was great. I love that idea. And I'm starting to talk myself into that, Will, of you don't have to reach for a quarterback at 12. I still want them to bring one home, and probably that Thursday night. But, man, if we could be talking about after round one, Friday on these airwaves on The Fan, and saying the Broncos acquired a tight end, the best in the group, and a quarterback. Now, maybe it is the fifth quarterback, but acquired a quarterback. We'd all feel pretty damn good on that Friday.
Okay, so let's reset a couple of things here. First of all, this notion that Nix is now Peyton's guy. Mm-hmm. Well, McCarthy was Peyton's guy. So just because McCarthy's now going to go in the top five or the top six, apparently, well, Sean can't land him, so he picked a new guy to fall in love with. Okay, whatever. I just find that kind of funny that it was always McCarthy and now it's Nix because McCarthy's going to go too high. Second of all,
again,
you mentioned
though, it's the, she don't like me? Never even liked her.
Exactly. Second of all, there's this notion that you mentioned. It's Bowers or a quarterback. And I'm asking the question, why can't it be Bowers and a quarterback? Why can't you take Brock Bowers at 12? And I listen to everything Stink had to say there, and I agree that Brock Bowers has a chance to be really special. And tight end is becoming a special position in this league with the Kelseys and the Kittles and the Mark Andrews and the Sam Laportas of the world and a few others. But also, Cortland Sutton caught 10 touchdowns last year, tied for fourth in the NFL. Why can't you package Cortland Sutton in a third to get up to the top of the second and take Michael Penix Jr. or Bo Nix? I think we need to stop looking at this as an or situation. Oh, it's Brock Bowers or a quarterback. No, it's Brock Bowers and a quarterback if we can get creative and pay Sean $18 million a year to get creative and keep George Payton after the worst trade in NFL history, the worst contract in NFL history, and hiring the worst head coach in Nathaniel Hackett in NFL history. This is why you are keeping these men on payroll if you're Greg Penner to get creative. And what would be the ultimate creative solution to this? That we all go to bed, not Thursday night, but Friday night after round two,
okay,
and say, oh, we now have Brock Bowers and Michael Penix Jr. on the Denver Broncos. Let's find a way to make that happen.
I like that a lot, and it's certainly very much so a play. I would also say, well, I guess with it being that, Will, and in your example of it being a second-round pick, I always maybe wonder is the wrong, or worry is the wrong word, and wonder is the right word, how Broncos country reacts. What kind of expectations are created by just a quarterback being selected, be it in the second round, be it in the third round? Hell, Michael Pratt, if they miss everything in like the fifth round, what kind of expectations? Because as Matt Smith and I have said all week, we are desperate, man, desperate for quarterback play.
Yeah, we're super desperate for quarterbacks, and it can't be Jarrett Stidham week one. It just can't. I can't have Russell Wilson coming back to Denver starting for the Pittsburgh Steelers at Empower Field a Mile High against Jarrett Stidham. Do you know how many terrible towels would be in the stand? I mean, Pittsburgh fans travel well, and I'm speculating here. The schedule will come out in a couple months. But
that's what it should be.
I'm speculating that it'll be Russ and the Steelers at Empower on week one. But, Josh, I shudder to think about that crowd that day. You can tell me it's 30-35% Steelers fans if it's Stidham versus Russ. Mm-hmm. Because what are Broncos fans going to do? Oh, I can get double the price for my tickets so I don't have to go watch Jarrett Stidham play. We are so desperate for a quarterback. It has to be a round one rookie or a very tippy top round two, but still in the big six. Bo Nix, Michael Penix, still in the big six that we've talked about for months and months. And that's just the way it has to be. There is no other rational discussion you can have. And I heard Mike Evans say at the end of that clip, well, why not just reload next year? Because, Mike, I've waited 7 years. Mm-hmm. I don't really feel like waiting an eighth.
Well, let me push back on Mike's behalf there of can you... Because I get it, man. It's hard. It's frustrating, and it's very difficult to tell your fan base exactly what you said. Hey, come spend your hard-earned money that you work your butt off to get and watch this bad product, because in 2025, we're going to make a huge jump. I understand that part.
And by the way, we raised ticket prices.
Remember,
they did do that this year, which a lot of people were not thrilled with.
Right. But I can, I don't know. I guess for me, I'm speaking for myself here. I understand that it is a slow play. I understand what I believe 2024 is going to be. And if you don't get a quarterback, like I would say this, I'm trying to talk myself into Bo Nix. It's what I did with J.J. McCarthy the last 10 days before he jumped over everybody. If there is a play in here where, let's say, it's a Michael Pratt or a Spencer Rattler or who's the kid from Tennessee with a cannon? Joe Milton? Is that his name?
Sounds right.
You know, late in the draft. I would be all right knowing that there is a big jump coming in 2025, but I'm also not somebody that spends my hard-earned money to go down and pay for season tickets or get a ticket to the game. You know what I mean? Like, I'll go work, and we get free credentials, and we go work the game, so I'm not coughing up my money. I understand why it would be harder for somebody else to accept those circumstances.
But here's the pushback on that. They are paying Russell Wilson $38 million to not play for them this year.
But that's the right move.
Okay, but you are so arrogant if you're Sean Payton that you're going to fix it, that $38 million can go play for the Steelers, but then you roll in with Jarrett Stidham and you go 3-14. That's sending a weird message to your fan base.
I get it.
Hey, this guy had to go so bad. We were so desperate to cut this dude out of our locker room that we're paying him $38 million to play for that other team, yet we go 3-14. See, now you're talking out of both sides of your mouth. You can't tell me it's all about 2025. Then you should have just kept Russ in 24, because guess what? You're paying him either way. The whole point of getting rid of Russ was to clear the path for a rookie to come in and start the rebuild. You're not clearing the path and starting the rebuild if you go with Jarrett Stidham.
Well, they could have. I mean, they could have brought back Russ, but the problem was the 25 salary, and Russ didn't want to play ball.
He didn't want to redo the injury guarantee, but they also could have approached that more rationally and more calmly.
Well,
and said
it's Sean Payton.
I know, but they could have said, "What about May 1st?" Because then you would have been through the draft and you would have known. And then it would have, because the problem was they wanted him to move it way down the road. Just ask him to move it a month and a half down the road, and then the NFL draft comes and goes, and you know whether or not Drake May or J.J. McCarthy or Bo Nix fell in your lap. That would have been smart, but yeah, like you said,
you're right about that.
Rational and, you know, lattes and all that, that's right. The Sean Payton world we live in.
You fall in line or you fall out. And that's what Russell Wilson decided.
It's just he's this 60-year-old dude who thinks his system is foolproof. Like, they didn't trade for Justin Fields because, quote, he didn't fit the system. Either Sean has the greatest scheme of all time and none of us should ever question it, or he's a dinosaur.
Yeah.
And I'll let you make up your mind which one it is.
Well, we're going to find out here once he does get that quarterback. Because I'm not as upset of that, of not getting Justin Fields. Sean's here, and Sean ain't going nowhere. So if Sean has a model of what the quarterback looks like, find that quarterback so that we can properly evaluate who he is.
But bro, it's not like he did this with six different guys. He did it with Drew Brees.
Yeah.
One of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. Drew Brees doesn't grow on trees. So that's all I'm saying, is that he doesn't want to adjust. And what has happened to guys who don't want to adjust? They don't have jobs. Mm-hmm. Bill Belichick, done. Pete Carroll, done. Some point, it's going to catch up to Sean Payton.
How you feeling about it, Broncos country? We're going to come back and kick off our lunch hour talking with James Merrillat about the clean sweep for Colorado teams last night. Ball Arena Bros are red hot, and the Rams are moving on. We're going to ask James who of these three teams can get the furthest coming up next.